This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
Welcome to Created Equal. From WDET in Detroit, I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me in the studio is Carey Jr. II. He is our show's producer.
Good day, Stephen.
Hey, Carey. So how much attention are you paying now to the presidential race? Both conventions are over. We're in the fall campaign season. Are you focusing more on what's happening?
Yeah, I feel like it's hard to get away from it when we work in news. It's always going to be a part of our daily diet. But I do think kind of all eyes turn to September 10th, right? This kind of first debate between Vice President Harris and former President Trump. Right?
First and right now only, right?
And only.
Maybe the only one we get. I always look forward, actually, to every 4 years, this period of time, this kind of 10 weeks between the end of the conventions and election day, because it is when you get to see more of the candidates, you get to hear more from Americans about what they're thinking about the race and what they're thinking about our country. And then, of course, we all go vote together in early November. Today, we want to talk about what that 10 weeks is likely to look like in 2024, kind of the things that are markers that voters and our listeners should be looking for as they try to make up their minds about who they want to cast their ballots for.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because, you know, we get this one debate, and I'm thinking, oh, because there were originally two debates between the candidates, now that Biden's withdrawn, it's just one between the potential candidates. If we get another one, because I'm always thinking debates are like the key indicator of what we're going to get from each candidate, and then seeing them kind of interact with one another. But now I'm just kind of curious to understand what else we should be looking out for to better understand their platforms and better understand like what they think is important to define America by. So, yeah.
Yeah. So who do we have today, Carey, to help us sort through all of this?
Yeah, we have a great panel of guests, a couple returning names. We've got Russ McNamara. He is a reporter and host of All Things Considered right here at WDET. We're also joined by E.J. Dion. He's a professor at the McCourt School of Public Policy at Georgetown University and a columnist for The Washington Post. And then we're also going to be joined by Jessica Taylor. She's a Senate and Governor's Editor at Cook Political Report. That's an organization that provides nonpartisan analysis of national elections and campaigns. So a little bit of analysis, a little bit of political commentator, columnist, and we get some good reporting right here from WDET.
Yeah, and we want to hear from listeners as well. 313-577-1019 is the number. What are you thinking about the presidential race as it really heats up here in the fall? Okay, Russ, EJ, and Jessica, it's great to have all three of you here in the studio. Thanks for joining us on Created Equal. I want to start with just a kind of state of play update from each of you about where we are as we get ready for this last 10-week push before Election Day. Russ, I'm going to start with you because you were on the ground at the DNC. What are your takeaways from the convention? What was the energy like among the folks there from Michigan, but also the kind of overall tenor as they nominated Kamala Harris and Tim Walz?
Well, in Chicago, the mood was great. The mood has changed significantly over the last 6 weeks. One thing that kind of stood out to me was that, and not that this isn't always the case, but in Milwaukee, Republicans clearly thought they were going to win. They were still riding high off of that terrible debate performance by Joe Biden. And Trump was shot. And so, you know, there was a swing of goodwill towards Trump that maybe lasted the 4 days of the convention. And then Joe Biden drops out. And so now you switch the thing. What happened in Chicago is that now all the Democrats think they're going to win because the party has coalesced around Kamala Harris, and the excitement level, who people were hedging their bets, saying there's nothing wrong with Joe Biden. We love Joe Biden. However, there's a level of excitement for Kamala Harris that definitely was not there for Joe Biden and the people that they've talked to and in themselves personally. And so the delegates uniformly were very excited.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the role of women, Russ. You and I were talking about that earlier today and how that is changing the tenor of things inside the Democratic Party. It's not just that Kamala Harris is the presidential nominee, but the power of women in the different constituencies that make up, especially the Democratic Party, are activated in a way that that I haven't seen in a really long time.
Right. America was clearly ready to elect a woman president back in 2016. Because of the numbers game, it did not work out. However, this time around, I think people are used to it. In Michigan, we get a front row seat to that because of Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, and A.G. Nestle.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put all that together, it's obviously there. Of course, you factor in like State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who has kind of her own following as well. She spoke at the DNC. And a lot of the delegates, I would say a majority of Democratic delegates were women. And, you know, the UAW sent an awful lot of delegates to Chicago, and those are black women. And so it's amazing to see how things have changed, and it's a party seemingly run by women right now. Lavora Barnes included with that.
She's the chair here in Michigan.
Exactly.
EJ Dion, you have covered lots of presidential campaigns. You're covering this one. I don't know if you were in Chicago or not, but I'd love to get your take on kind of what's happening and where we are as we go in, as we go into the fall.
It's always good to be back on WDET, and I was in Chicago, and I have been to a lot of conventions, as you suggested, and I never been to one quite like this. There are comparisons to the Obama convention of 2008 for celebrations. And also, we forget how much energy there was at the Hillary Clinton 2016 convention because of the idea of the first woman candidate, among other things. This was something different again, because you had a situation here, whereas even at the Obama convention, there had been a very tough conflict between a tough fight between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama before he got that nomination. In the case of Hillary Clinton's nomination, it was a very tough fight with Bernie Sanders. There was none of that here. And, you know, I was saying to a friend that, you know, when you have a near-death experience and then undergo a miraculous resurrection, joy is the result. And that's how a lot of Democrats felt. And then the friend added that you have an immaculate conception, which is a candidate chosen without a long fight. So there is enormous unity here. And I think what you're seeing is Kamala Harris has picked back up all of the Democratic votes that should have been there for Joe Biden. But there were real doubts about him. I think she has especially brought back younger people. I would say that the poll I saw, that the number I saw that hit me the hardest is that when you asked, I think it was either voters under 30 or under 35, if they were enthusiastic when they were a Democrat, when they were for Biden or when they were for Harris, Harris's enthusiasm number is 19 points higher than it was just you know, before he dropped out for Biden. I think that the race isn't closed yet. But what you're seeing is Harris edge ahead in a lot of the swing states narrowly. Or they're either she's ahead or they're tied. That's a huge change from a month and a half ago. And that's why Democrats are in such an elated mood. And you will forgive my voice, because like thousands of people, I picked up COVID at the Democratic Convention, but I'm back, feel much better now.
No,
but,
we're glad you're on the mend. And
I sound like poor person's Bob Dylan with this voice of mine.
See, I got my COVID out of the way after the RNC.
After the RNC, right.
Bipartisan COVID here.
Jessica Taylor, I want to bring you into the conversation, and I want to start with just kind of a look at polls and what they're telling us. But there was a stat I saw, I think yesterday or the day before, that just kind of blew me away. And that was about registrations among African-American women being up 175%, which I think goes to some of what I was talking with Russ about, this enthusiasm among women for the Democratic ticket. But I also want to talk about what that means in the race more generally. How does that change the numbers that we see in the polling overall, and of course in some of these key swing states?
Sure. Well, I believe I got COVID after the RNC, so but not after the DNC.
No.
So yes, but I despite many contacts, I was okay after the DNC. But you know, I just echo EJ, like the enthusiasm was just palpable last week, and just what a difference 5 weeks makes. Because I remember thinking, you know, at the RNC in Milwaukee, it just sort of felt like a fait accompli that Republicans were going to win. There was just so much confidence there. And then you're right, we have seen just a change there. You know, when I was talking with people about Michigan in July after, quote, the debate, I think we can just refer to it as the debate, that changed the course of history.
Yeah.
You know, there was very much worries there in Michigan about decreased Black turnout, particularly in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that was actually, I shifted the rating in your open Senate seat there in Michigan after that, because, you know, even though Ilissa Slotkin has the most money, there were just worries that if Biden was dragging down the top of the ticket, just how much could she overperform?
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
You know, so we have seen, I think, that increased registration, just increased participation among Black voters, among Latino voters, too. You know, that's because really we were down in the presidential race to Biden's only path was Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and he had to win Nebraska's second congressional district.
Huh.
And that would get him exactly to 270. We at the Cook Political Report did an event in conjunction with the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics at the DNC, where we had Future Forward, which is the main Harris super PAC, had been the Biden super PAC. And they told us that after the debate, that their modeling had Biden only in single-digit percentage chances to win.
Wow.
That's how dire things were. You know, I think that they've cautioned, and other Democrats have, that their polling is not as necessarily rosy as we're seeing. But, you know, I'm looking here at the Real Clear Politics average this morning there in Michigan. Harris is up 2.2. We saw some more polls coming out, you know, over the past few days that have Harris up, you know, a couple of points, all sort of within the margin of error. In these races, or tied or down a few. So, I mean, in Michigan, it's just, I think it's going to be incredibly close. But I mean, she is in the fight in every single state. We at the Cook Political Report also shifted this week North Carolina into the toss-up column. Mm. You know, this is a state that Democrats have not won since 2008.
Right.
And, you know, that's a large part because of African-American turnout there in North Carolina. Now the percentage is not as high as it is in Georgia, and that's where Harris is today, trying to make inroads with Black voters, but also rural voters. So I think just Harris is able to compete in places where Biden was simply not.
Yeah.
And it just, the enthusiasm and young people, the worry among Democrats was that these voters were going to stay home, that no matter how much they told them, this is a threat of a Trump presidency, that these voters were just like, apathy was Biden's biggest problem. And Harris has completely flipped that. And there's genuine enthusiasm. And I think what we've also seen a change in is just that Harris is now the change candidate.
Mm.
You know, mm. If you look back at these past few election cycles, the change candidate has won.
In
2008, yeah. Barack Obama was the change candidate. In 2016, Trump was the change candidate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Clinton there, but, you know, a lot of baggage, you know, going back to the 90s.
Yeah.
And it was sort of, you know, do you put another Clinton back in office? And, you know, I think a lot of people were just like, let's try Trump. What's the worst that can happen? In 2020, Biden was the change candidate, just a change from Trump. And I think in 2024, up until now, Trump was going to be the change candidate from Biden. But now the script has been completely flipped. And Harris is, despite the continued unpopularity of Biden, she's just been able to put, I think just because a lot of voters still didn't know who the vice president was or what she did or much about her.
Yeah.
And she's been able to define herself. Just, I mean, these past 5 weeks have really been flawless, but we have her first interview alongside Tim Walz coming up tonight with CNN.
Yeah.
And then you're right, that debate, like, that's the date I have circled on my calendar. How could this change things given how consequential the last debate was? Now, I don't think Kamala Harris is going to go up there and we're going to worry about her just getting sentences out. But I mean, just also the fact that Trump has been thrown off his game. He does not know how to react to a Black woman. And I think when he says things like he did at the National Association of Black Journalists, she's not Black enough. Yeah. They're talking about those Black women, those people from the UAW. Like, that is just, that is hammering home exactly what they don't like about Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I underscore something Jessica said.
Go ahead.
I thought that was a really good analysis. And you've seen this in the Cook Political Report ratings. What one of the most important things Harris has done is broaden the map of the election. Because as Jessica said, Biden had a really, really narrow strategy to win and barely win.
Mm-hmm.
What you've got now are two things that have happened simultaneously. First of all, certain states that were actually getting close before Biden dropped out, Democratic states that might suddenly be open to Trump, Minnesota, New Hampshire are good examples, now seem relatively safely back in the Democratic column. In the meantime, you have Harris and Walz down in Georgia. Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada are all now very much in play, which means that Harris could lose one of the big three, you know, blue wall states and still manage to put together an electoral college majority. Having those two paths really makes the Democratic path a lot easier. Again, I think we're not done yet. We're a long way from done. These numbers are still close. But that is a huge shift in the election.
Yeah.
As EJ said, at the RNC, we had in our event with the University of Chicago, we had Tony Fabrizio, who's Trump's pollster there.
Sure.
And he was talking about, he said, we can win. We see a path in New Mexico. We see a path in Minnesota. We see a path in Virginia, which was a Trump, I mean, which was a Biden plus 10 state.
Yep.
You know, so they were thinking we can get up to 320, 325 electoral votes easy. It was a little bit of spiking football, I think, looking back now, just given how quickly things change. But yes, we moved this week also in moving North Carolina. We moved Minnesota and New Hampshire from lean Democrat back to likely Democrat. So, I mean, really, we're back to sort of the same seven core states that we have in 2020.
Yeah.
And I think the Trump campaign is going to keep their eye on these seven states because that is how you get to 270.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to continue talking with Russ McNamara, EJ Dionne, and Jessica Taylor about the fall presidential campaign. Election Day is about 10 weeks away. Are you paying attention yet? What are you paying attention to? What are you looking for that you might hear or see from Kamala Harris or Donald Trump that might help you make up your mind? Are you looking at this September 10th presidential debate, maybe the vice presidential debate that's also on the calendar? What are the things that move the election one way or another between now and November? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. Would also love to hear from folks who just have not been able to make up their minds yet. Maybe you're an independent, not loyal to one party or another. What is it that you're looking for that will help you make a decision about what to do in November? We'll be right back with more Created Equal. We're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and we're talking about the fall presidential campaign, which is really about to get heated up here over the next 10 weeks as we get ready to vote in November to decide whether Donald Trump or Kamala Harris will be the next president of the United States. We're talking with three folks who are paying pretty close attention to what's going on. Russ McNamara is a reporter here at WDET and host of All Things Considered. He was at both the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention. E.J. Dionne is a professor at the McCourt School of Public Policy at Georgetown University, also a columnist at the Washington Post. He was also at both conventions. And we've got Jessica Taylor with us as well. She is the Senate and governor's editor at the Cook Political Report. That is an organization that provides nonpartisan analysis of national elections and campaigns. We're going to hear from you, the listeners, as well. Give us a call. Let us know what you make of the state of the race at this point. What are the things you're looking for from the candidates to help you make up your mind if you haven't yet? Have you already decided what you're doing in November? Give us a call. Let us know what things factored into that decision, whether you're supporting Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. Okay, I want to talk about uncommitted voters or independent voters, whatever you want to call them, because it does seem like that's what's left here. As we were talking in the first segment, the switch from Biden to Harris seems to have firmed up the Democratic base, and I think Democrats are expecting that they'll get the folks that they always get out to be able to cast ballots for their side. You know, the question is the folks who are kind of in the middle. And I want to start with the news this week, which was that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who was an independent candidate for president and was polling at about 4% in the race, decided that he was going to suspend his campaign, and he said he was endorsing Donald Trump. That's a 4% that now has to go do something else. And it's not the only swath of independent voters, of course, but that's an important chunk. I want to start with just thinking about what happens now that he's out of the race and what moves independent voters to one side or another. Jessica Taylor, I'm going to start with you this time.
Yeah, so even though he has dropped out, I will note that at least there in Michigan, he is going to remain on the ballot.
He'll be
there
on the ballot,
With the Natural Law Party. So I certainly expect his support to dwindle, and we had seen that. You know, third-party candidates always poll higher than they end up getting on election day. And, you know, he was in double digits, but I think went down, certainly. And what we were seeing, which it makes sense why Trump was pushing for him to drop out and get his endorsement, was that, you know, we talked about these double haters really a lot. And I think that's what a lot of undecided voters were. They didn't like either Biden or Trump. Mm-hmm. After we saw the switch, we saw a lot of them were just looking for something different. They were also looking for someone that wasn't 78 years old or 81 years old. So a 59-year-old candidate presented very much a difference. But some of these, if they still didn't like either, I think there was a receptacle for Kennedy, but really a lot of that was people that still, they weren't going to vote Democratic, but they didn't want to vote for Trump either. So RFK was that outlet. And so now Trump getting those, I think certainly does help him in some of these states, but I think it's marginal, but this is a race that's going to be decided on the margins. So it's important, you know, but if you still don't like Trump, there is still a way to cast a protest vote, I will underscore. So, you know, we saw, I mean, in Michigan in 2016, Jill Stein made a difference in those races.
She
so,
did.
You know, those can still make a difference. And Stein will be on the ballot in places as well. So there are other options, Cornel West in places to do those votes. But I do think what we have seen a lot of those undecided voters, I've been really struck by looking at some polling in other states too. And I think that non-college women is one place that we have seen moving toward Harris. And I think that's a key demographic. You know, education is one of the biggest dividing lines that we have. And I think those in more rural and suburban areas, and if Harris can win those, I think that's going to be really key. But I still think both of these candidates still have things to prove and reasons. You need to have a reason why to vote for someone, and not just to vote against them. So yes, I think Kennedy dropping out was certainly noteworthy, and I think it helps Trump. But if you still are in those double haters, which have dwindled certainly since the switch at the top of the ticket, but if you still don't like either candidate, like what are you going to do? Are you going to not vote? Are you going to cast a protest vote anyway? I think we still have to be cognizant of that, especially looking at the history of 2016.
So Jessica, what difference do things like the debates make in these kinds of situations? I mean, when you've got a close race like this and people, as you point out, who are still not necessarily in love with either candidate, there are not a lot of opportunities for the candidates to really make their case directly to voters. The debates are one of them, but do they swing the race one way or another?
When we're talking about a race at the margins, I think everything can have, an outsized impact. I still think, I'm not sure there was a more consequential presidential debate in history than the one that we had at the end of June, really. And, I think sometimes debates only matter if there's a big screw up, again, like there was with Biden. So I think Harris still has to prove herself as, being a leader. I think just she needs to come across as competent. And I think she's done that so far. And I think she needs to throw Donald Trump off his game, which I think, again, given how he's responded to her and just his Twitter tirades that we're seeing again of different things, I think that's certainly possible. I think Trump needs to focus on the issues. And if he can do that, because on the issues in polling, Republicans are still winning because it's on the economy and it's on immigration. Mm-hmm. And, that's when I talk with Republican strategists, they're like, if he can just stay on these issues. Again, I remember being back at the RNC and where Trump was, being kind of quiet and more on message, at least that week after after the assassination attempt. That's just how crazy these past few months have been. The fact that, we kind of forget there was an assassination attempt, all of this. But, when I remember being asked at a panel that we did, do you think Trump can stay on message? And I'm like, 9 years of following Donald Trump tells me the answer is no. And so, again, he can, even one of those press conferences he had at Bedminster, where he had out the, different cereals and different things talking about inflation and price inflation, but then he goes off on tangents and stuff. Yeah. And so you lose the message in that. And Donald Trump has just never been shown to be an effective messenger to stay on the message that Republicans needed to get on.
It's still infrastructure week.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to 4 years ago.
True.
One of the more interesting things about, the fringe left and the fringe right is how they just kind of fold all the way back around and they kind of meet in the middle in various different ways. But in this case, it seems like they're all breaking towards the right with RFK Jr. now endorsing Trump. Tulsi Gabbard falls into that. She's a former Democrat, but now she's endorsing Trump. She did so in Detroit on Monday. And then Jill Stein, all of her messaging at an event yesterday was anti-Harris. It was kind of building up her credentials, but it was anti-Harris. So it seems like the fringe left and the fringe right are kind of coalescing around Donald Trump.
That's really interesting. EJ, give us your sense of what difference, a debate could make, and also give us a sense of I had a conversation with somebody about the Trump campaign and how undisciplined the campaign has been this time versus the candidate. I mean, the candidate has always been undisciplined. This is the third time he's run for office. And as someone just said, you're not going to keep him on message. But what saved him in some of the other cases was that he had a very structured campaign that could message around him and keep people focused on the message. It seems like they're not doing as great a job of that this time, and I've heard a couple people say that it's just not the same. It's not the same organization.
9 years on the scene is a very long time, and I think it's one of the reasons, as Jessica and Russ have suggested, that Harris, even though she's vice president of the United States, has been able to be the change candidate because Donald Trump has been there forever. And you really do get a sense. And I was struck, by the way, for the record, I wasn't at the RNC. I did go to the Democratic convention.
Okay.
But I was struck at how Trump had an enormous opportunity at the Republican convention. He had just been shot. Even people who don't like Donald Trump were sympathetic. They don't want presidential candidates shot.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of national sympathy at that moment. For the first, I don't know, 30 minutes of that speech, he gave an account of what it was like being shot. And a lot of people were with him, or at least, you know, were riveted by that. And he couldn't stop himself by sticking to this speech that he was supposed to give. And he went on and on and on. And I was on a live chat with some Washington Post colleagues. And I said toward the end of that speech, I said, a lot of Democrats are singing Happy Days Are Here Again, because here is an utter lack of discipline. The other thing that surprises me is that the Trump campaign should have been ready for a Kamala Harris nomination. You know, the day after that debate, you knew that Joe Biden was in trouble. You weren't certain he'd be off the ticket, but you really knew there was a great chance of that. Yeah. And I think it was pretty obvious to most political people that Harris was the most likely person to be the nominee. And yet they really gave her pretty much a whole month without finding an effective attack. Mm. And, you know, lastly, Trump's act just seems to be getting old. If I could come back to a question earlier. I think Jessica is very right to underscore non-college women as a key swing group we're going to be looking at. I think another key swing group are Latino voters who are generally a Democratic group, but have shown a lot more volatility over the last 20 years than people realize. George W. Bush got over 40% of the Latino vote in his two elections in 2000 and 2004. I think a lot of attention is on them. And some collection of, however you want to describe them, suburban moderate conservatives, Nikki Haley Republicans. I think it's no accident that the Democrats put so many Republicans on the stage because another way in which another thing Harris has to do to win is really sweep in those collar suburbs around Philadelphia and in suburban areas in Michigan, Wisconsin, and around Atlanta. And I think those kinds of voters will be very much at the center. But I appreciate Jessica mentioning non-college women because I don't think they get the attention they deserve for the role they could end up playing in electing the next president.
Right.
One of the things that I noticed as far as tone is that maybe Democrats are finally ready to go on the offensive for a change, and they're taking the opportunity to go against, you know, a Republican candidate who himself has spent, you know, the last 9 years in the offensive against anybody who has ever gotten in his way. You notice when Michelle Obama spoke, it was no longer when they go low, we go high. It was her being a little bit more aggressive in her tone. Former President Obama was making gestures with his hands that seemingly was taking shots at Donald Trump. And so and there was a lot of a more aggressive posture by Democrats that we really haven't seen in, well, ever.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's and I'm curious what my colleagues think of this, that it's aggressive, but they've been aggressive in the past in particular ways. I think what's different now is the tone is mocking. They're not trying to, Tim Walz's introduction of the word weird into American politics. It's mocking. It's saying these guys are not normal. These guys are not serious. Then I think the mocking tone might end up being more effective because the Trump as the greatest threat to democracy we've ever seen, and there's a good case for that, but that actually plays to Trump's desire to look strong.
Yes.
And the attacks they're making now are actually designed to make him look weak. I thought you heard that in a number of the speeches, particularly, for example, Bill Clinton's mocking him for talking about Hannibal Lecter all the time. Mm-hmm. And You know, Clinton said, you know, Obama, kindly call me the explainer in chief, but I have no idea how to explain that one.
Yeah, which the Hannibal Lecter made it into that RNC speech that we were talking about earlier. You know, that was where I could just sort of see Trump unraveling and going against his best instincts, you know, because as EJ said, if he had just stuck to sort of that first 30 minutes of the speech, I think it could have been a home run. But the more he just went on and on, he went into Hannibal Lecter. He just went into tirades about different things off topic and different things. I mean, I was standing there on the floor. My feet hurt. I think a lot of other right. delegates' feet hurt. You
Some
know?
People were falling asleep.
Yeah, you've been there. He goes on an hour and a half speech. I mean, you know, brevity is the soul of wit. Like, it just, you know, like, yeah. when you're a pastor that goes over, you know, you start losing people. And I think that's what, again, you know, Trump's rallies are the same way. And, you know, Harris was able to, Trump's speech was not focused on winning those Nikki Haley voters.
Yeah.
Harris's speech last Thursday night was.
It really was, yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation, and we are going to get to you, the listeners, your phone calls and social media comments about the 2024 presidential campaign and the fall push toward Election Day. If you want to join us, give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I've got three guests with me. Russ McNamara, who's a reporter and host of All Things Considered here on WDET. EJ Dionne, who is a professor at the McCourt School of Public Policy at Georgetown and a columnist for The Washington Post. And Jessica Taylor, who is a Senate and governor's editor at the Cook Political Report. It's an organization that provides nonpartisan analysis of elections and campaigns in the U.S. We want to hear from you about the fall presidential campaign as well. What are you paying attention to? What are you waiting for to see from one side or another to make up your mind if you're one of the voters who hasn't yet decided what you're doing? 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019, and you can also go to Twitter, and we can include you that way. Let's start today with Ethan in Detroit. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. I would call myself an uncommitted voter. I think that I find myself in a large number of people who see in our communities and personal relationships desire and belief that a better world is possible, and are not finding in either major political party much beyond rhetoric towards making that happen. And I think the make or break issue for many of us is what's happening with Israel and Palestine. And that while there's some lip service to ending support for Israel's actions in Palestine, there's approval of billions of dollars of arms to supply Israel with the continued violence they're committing. Mm-hmm. And so for many of us, we feel like while there's lip service to change mm-hmm. at a structural level, it's not bearing itself out. Yeah. And
so, Ethan, tell me, where does that leave you as a voter? What are you thinking you'll do in November?
Well, I think it's kind of a double bind, because there are certain ways in which the two parties' policies actually do play out and affect the material conditions of working class people in this country and in the world, and that can't be ignored. But there's also a dilemma that we find ourselves in and feel like we need to put pressure with our potential vote on the party that might actually make a decision to end the violence that our tax dollars are supplying weapons for.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure. I need to hear more. You know, I need to hear commitment beyond lip service.
Yeah. Ethan, I really appreciate the call and the thoughtful approach there. EJ, I'll give you a first crack at talking about how this issue in particular can cut against the Democrats, who of course had a real problem in the primaries with uncommitted voters. That happened here in Michigan. There was a surprising number of them cast. Does the switch to from Biden to Harris do enough to get people like Ethan, who would normally, I think, vote Democratic, to do so?
Well, as Ethan was speaking, I pulled up the primary results, and you had 101,000, almost 102,000 people vote uncommitted. Joe Biden got 625,000. Yep. 100,000 voters is a lot of people when you have the kinds of small, relatively small margins you have. And I think the question, that people like Ethan are going to be answering for themselves, but that the campaigns are going to have to deal with, is how many of these voters, when looking at the choice of Trump and Harris, say, I have disagreements with the Biden administration and therefore with Kamala Harris. And I thought her tone on this was somewhat different than Biden's at the convention, even though her policy is broadly the same. But I think she tends to talk about Palestinians and their situation with a lot of empathy, but that may not be enough for voters like Ethan. But the question I think Democrats are going to try to encourage on the part of these voters is, do you actually think Trump would be better, and do you want to risk him in the White House? And so again, 100,000 is a lot, but they're going to be paying attention to a lot of other voters too. It was, even in the primary, where smaller turnout was 13%.
Yeah.
But I think this is going to be on the minds of Democrats all the way through, because they don't want to lose a lot of voters like Ethan.
Yeah. Go ahead, Russ.
I've talked with a lot of uncommitted voters. I've talked with the uncommitted delegates. And the main takeaway is that saying, well, what would you prefer, President Trump? And the answer is, like, fundamentally, it is the same when it comes to seeing what's happening in Gaza right now. It doesn't really matter. The Harris campaign was the one that shut down a chance for a Palestinian American to speak at the Democratic National Convention. There was a sit-in outside organized by Abbas Alawiya.
One of the uncommitted delegates to the convention, yeah.
Exactly. So, and this is something that a lot of people care about. Polling has shown that 75% of Democrats want a stop in hostilities in Gaza right now. You would think this would be a layup and a chance to move on for the Harris campaign, but it's fundamentally still there and will continue to nag the Harris campaign all the way through the election.
Yeah. Jessica, how does this show up in the polls right now, this issue of the Middle East and Gaza?
Yeah, I do think it's in those undecided voters. And I think that it is a motivating issue, particularly for young people. And, you know, in Michigan there, that's probably the key state I'm watching to see how, if this impacts things and how blocks their move, because you all have the largest Arab American percentage in the country, with, you know, around Dearborn and different things. And, you know, you did see Harris take a different tone, I think, at the convention in her speech, but it was right after, you know, she reemphasized, you know, sending arms to Israel and different things. Mm-hmm. And at an event last week at the DNC, your other senator, Gary Peters, I was at an event there that he had with Politico, and he said that, you know, Harris should take a more aggressive tone on this, on the issue of Gaza, and should emphasize where she breaks with the Biden administration. So I will be intrigued to see if this is, I think this is certainly an issue that's going to come up in the debate. Probably she'll be asked about it tonight in her interview. Does she start to take a different tone in regards to that? But I think if it's going to have an outsized impact anywhere, it's going to be there in Michigan.
And that marks a staunch change in tone for Gary Peters.
Yes.
I've talked with him on the issue multiple times since October 7th. And if he's changing his tone, then he knows nobody understands the ledger better than Gary Peters. Right, and if he's changing his tone on this, then that means probably the party as a whole should as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Ethan, really appreciate the call and the very thoughtful comments. Let's go next to Sunbeep in Southfield. Sunbeep, welcome to Created Equal.
Hey, Stephen. Yeah, I'm in Bloomfield, but, you know,
this whole uncommitted vote, I think it's valorous to defend your cause. But with President Trump, he's never been a friend of Palestinian people. I think he's always supported Netanyahu, and Netanyahu met with President Trump. So wasting a vote or not voting and supporting someone that's been antithetical to your cause, I don't see any benefit in that. You can try to influence President Harris, or not President, but Vice President Harris, but not voting or voting for the opposite party seems kind of defeating the purpose.
Hmm. Does that mean for you they get your vote regardless here, Sandeep?
No, my vote is against Trump, right, no matter what. I mean, he's a disaster. Yeah. He only cares about himself, and he's never, in his personal life as well as his political life, he's never cared for anybody. And the only reason he got into office, because people hated Hillary Clinton. Even my own mom started supporting President Trump because of she didn't like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how his political career started, and I think it's too bad that it's still going on.
Yeah, I really appreciate the call. Go ahead.
Could I mention something? I think right now on this show, we just had a debate that is going to go on among those 100,000 voters.
Yeah.
One that I can't vote Democratic with the first caller, or is having trouble voting Democratic because of Gaza, and the second caller saying, yeah, you may have that problem, but Trump would be way worse, and how can you let him be president? And that's going to play out all across, you know, the parts of Michigan where that's a very live issue. I just wanted to throw out some numbers I looked up as we were talking, because I think this may sort of describe the state of the race right now. It's not, are you for Harris or Trump? It's favorable, unfavorable ratings of these candidates. Biden's favorable, unfavorable is 40% to 56%, minus 16.
Mm-hmm.
Trump's is 44 to 53, minus 8.6 if you do third place in the number.
Mm-hmm.
Harris, 47.2 to 48.7, only negative 1.5.
Wow.
So that Trump is a net negative 8.6, Harris is net negative 1.5. To me, if the Trump people let those numbers stay where they are for Harris, this is a path for him to lose, which suggests that this is going to become a very, very negative campaign, because they've got to bump up those negative numbers for Harris if they're going to pull this out.
Yeah, yeah. Jessica, do we see that movement in the polls that mirrors that unfavorability, and I guess the flip side is likability?
Yeah, I do think that's pretty indicative of where we see across the country. And I think, but Harris is more undefined. But I think, again, it's 68 days now, that's working in her favor. You know, I do think if this were a race where she had become the nominee, you know, back in January, you would have had more hits against her and things too. But I think there's just a shorter period of time. And I think we also need to remember that voting starts in a lot of states very soon. You know, ballots in North Carolina, absentee ballots go out next week. Yeah. So, you know, while it's maybe 68 days till the election, a lot of people are going to be casting their votes very soon. So I think just time is on Harris's side in that regard. And that, yeah, I mean, it wasn't that Trump was, and in none of these places, it's not that Trump has improved much of his margin since 2020, or even since it was him versus Biden. It's just that Harris has been able to improve on Biden's numbers. And it's all, you know, Trump's never really been that much above water. I think there was a period more when Biden was on there that I think there was a little bit of Trump amnesia in the polling. Mm-hmm. The people were sort of, and I think this is Trump's whole message, is that, listen, you know, if you, which I think he's an imperfect messenger on this, as other things kind of pile up, of, you know, it's the economy, you know, you liked what, and some of it is sort of more tangible things than, and this has been the Biden administration's problem all along. You can say, look where job growth is, look where the inflation numbers are, and different things. But if people are paying more at the gas pump, you drive by there every day, you know what gas prices are, you know that your grocery bill has increased, that you're paying more for meat and dairy and different things. That's what people remember. They remember before 2020, you know, put aside COVID and things, just that I was paying less, interest rates. It was cheaper to buy a home and to buy a car. And so it's tangible things like that that Trump needs people to remember. But then when you dig into, I think, those disapproval numbers, it's that you didn't like the chaos. And EJ said something I want to drive home to, just how much at the DNC you had former Republicans, former people from the Trump administration that were speaking.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've had so many former cabinet members and or high administration officials from the Trump administration come out and essentially say Trump is unfit for office. You didn't have that crossover at the RNC that we saw at the DNC.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jessica Taylor, EJ Dionne, Russ McNamara. Really great discussion. Thanks to all three of you for being here with us on Created Equal.
Great to be with everybody. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That is going to do it for us on Created Equal. Remember, if your business cares about civil conversations, equity, opportunity in our community, you should sponsor this program. You can do so at wdet.org/sponsorship.